Hey, Founder Fam, before we dive into another incredible conversation, I want to share something really special with you. Whether you're just joining us or you've been following us since the beginning, you've been a critical part of our community working to change entrepreneurial education. I started Founder almost a decade ago with the mission to provide entrepreneurs access to the world's greatest business leaders. Our goal was to break down barriers to entrepreneurial education, and that's taken us on a journey from Founder Magazine to this podcast and beyond. And today marks the next step in that journey, Founder Plus. I'm proud to introduce you to Founder Plus, which is an all-access pass to each of our online courses and programs and their proven frameworks for success. It puts every strategy we've compiled from world-class instructors at your fingertips while connecting you to a global network of like-minded entrepreneurs. Founder Plus will take your business to the next level for today and tomorrow. So whether you've just joined our family or you've watched us grow from humble beginnings, we're really thrilled to have you join us in this exciting new phase of making the Founder brand and this company the world's best entrepreneurial community to launch and grow your business. So finally, before we get into today's episode, I'm inviting you to come back, check out Founder Plus, and go to founder.com/membership. I'm really excited, guys. This is an incredible new evolution of entrepreneurial education. And our mission is really to get as many of these founders that we interview to teach and also give back on the Founder Plus platform and really go more in depth with the knowledge and the experiences and the lessons learned that they're sharing all in Founder Plus. So guys, please go check it out if you're enjoying these interviews. That's it from me. I hope you enjoy this episode. Now let's jump in.
It's like the more data that you can collect, the more you talk to your users, the better off the experience is going to be. And hopefully you're going to minimize people that end up snoozing and kind of churning off your emails.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now. The Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amoroso, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
All right. So Chase, this isn't the first interview we've done. We've done many with you. You've taught an incredible email marketing e-commerce course on our platform. You're the absolute go-to when it comes to email marketing, especially when it comes to e-commerce. You've helped all of our students in our community and platform so much. So when it comes to email marketing, you're the guy. So the first question that I ask everyone that comes on is, how did you get your job, aka how did you find yourself doing the work you're doing today?
Yeah, Nathan, pumped to be here and can't wait to get started. So for myself, so in college, I had so many jobs and internships where I was exposed to sales and marketing. So I was just a hustler in college. And I was doing all these different jobs, internships, just trying to figure out what the heck I wanted to do. And after kind of taking some time to reflect on, you know, A, what I was good at, and B, like what things or thing was working well at work, I landed on email marketing, and I really haven't looked back ever since. So I really started my career doing email marketing for SaaS, for newsletter businesses, for info, and I ultimately found e-commerce in 2017 and have been almost exclusively focused on e-com email marketing ever since. So I just was kind of busy working, found all these different types of marketing disciplines, and just fell in love with email because the way that you can communicate to so many people, but in a way that feels very personal if you do it right. So if you do email well, you could communicate with 100,000 people in a way that feels like the email is almost crafted for them or for a few people versus it being like this crazy thing like social media. You put a post out there, you see all the engagements, you know it's not just for you. It's a little bit less personal. So that's what I really found, you know, and fell in love with in terms of email marketing.
Yeah. And look, when it comes to email, and if you run an e-commerce business, you have to get your email marketing right because you could double your revenue just from without it, right? You could triple your revenue. You can do all sorts of crazy stuff. So You've taught a course on our platform, and you're really like the go-to guy when it comes to e-commerce, especially for email marketing. So I'm curious, I remember last we checked, you generated over, is it 500 million now in email attributables? 400? I can't remember the number exactly, right?
We kind of stopped keeping count. It's hundreds of millions of dollars. We're sending billions of emails every year for our clients. We specialize with working with 7 to 9 figure brands. And to your point, email typically accounts for anywhere from like a quarter to upwards of like a half of their revenue. Email alone, that's not including SMS or anything else. So email still today in 2023 and beyond is insanely powerful. So I hope everyone really takes notes, because I've got a lot of cool stuff planned for today.
Awesome. So, well, let's kick off. Like, when it comes to, if you were advising a, you know, an earlier stage brand, how would you recommend they get into email? Like, let's just, man, I know you know what to share. Like, let's just go.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing I want to preface is email is only as good as the traffic and the leads that you have coming in. You know, there'll be times where people reach out and be like, hey, can you do our email marketing? It's like, well, do you have a list? Do you have traffic? And they're like, no. So I want to preface that email is only going to convert well if you have good traffic and you have leads coming through. If you do that, you're in a great spot. So once you've started driving traffic, and traffic could mean paid ads, you know, on Facebook and Instagram, it could be paid search on Google, it could be affiliate marketing, it could be influencer marketing, it could be SEO. There's so many ways to drive traffic, and that's not what we're here to talk about today. But if you find one or more of those channels, I would then focus on the following. So number one, we have to turn those traffic into leads. So we do that through an email pop-up, right? A form on your website that typically pops up in the center or the full screen that asks for your email. In e-commerce, it's typically accompanied with an offer. 10% off, free shipping, $10 off, entry into a giveaway, into a sweepstake. So we need some kind of mechanism to collect emails. And you want to optimize and test the offer and test the timing. Do you show it right away? Do you show it after someone scrolled a percentage of the page? You show it on exit intent? Test the different types of behaviors as well as the offers. That's number one. From there, you want to build out automated emails. So if someone enters their email into your form, into your pop-up, we then want to send them what's called a welcome series for non-buyers. Now, this is 3, 4, 5, 6 emails that's really focused on building trust and affinity with the subscriber and your brand, getting them used to kind of receiving emails from you, delivering whatever that value proposition you promised, that offer, that discount, that free shipping, that content, and really just building trust through social proof, through UGC, through reviews, through any kind of press mentions, and highlighting kind of your best products that they should probably start with. These are our best sellers. These are what people say about them. So building out the core flows. So we just talked about the welcome series. It's also building out what's called the abandonment flows. So it's a site abandonment email, a browse abandonment email, an abandoned cart, abandoned checkout. These are different emails that are triggered based off some kind of behavior that happens. So if someone's on your list, they add something to cart, but they don't start checkout or they don't make a purchase, we'll want to send them an abandoned cart. So each of the ones I mentioned, the site abandonment, the browse abandonment, the abandoned cart, and the abandoned checkout, those are all kind of different levels and have different filters that are triggering those emails. And all the email platforms you use, this should be fairly simple to set up. So that part shouldn't be too hard. And then the last thing on that one, before I talk about a few others, is post-purchase. Once someone buys from you, you really want to kind of confirm and reaffirm that they made the right decision, that they made the right purchase. So sending customer thank you emails, sending review requests to get feedback and kind of reviews on your product, sending cross-sells and upsells. You know what they purchased, so you know what they like. Make recommendations that are going to be complimentary for them and beneficial for them. And, you know, win back emails. So it's really important. You drive the traffic, you turn the traffic into an email, you automate these sequences, these automations of emails that are really high intent. And then from there, we also want to send ongoing weekly campaigns. That could be things like product launches, flash sales, holiday emails, you know, new blog content, different types of social proof, any kind of current events. And then from there, along with the campaigns, we're going to leverage what's called segmentation. And is this making sense so far? Am I going
This is awesome. This is awesome. Keep going, man.
Okay, cool. So along with the campaigns, right, we have to pick a segment or a list to send to. So we want to pick things like folks that are engaged, a 90-day engaged. So someone that's opened and or clicked in the last 90 days. Other type segmentation might be geography-based. So I'm in the United States, I'm on the west side of it. I'm in California. The weather here is 75 degrees or higher and sunny year round. So, you know, in the winter here, you could still probably send me an email with a t-shirt or flip-flops and shorts as an apparel company, and I would buy. Whereas that same time of year in the winter, for someone on the East Coast, let's say like in New York, you'll want to send them things like jackets, pants, beanies, you know, socks, those types of things. So leveraging geography, even leveraging things like gender. So if you're an apparel company, you sell things for men versus women, you know, send the items for men to men and send the items for women to women. And there's all types of things that you can do, which we'll kind of talk about a little bit later around like AI and predictive analytics to understand someone's gender based off of kind of census data. So someone's first name is this. What's the likelihood that that's male versus female? Are you not sure? So there's some really cool stuff that you guys can do based off names and other kind of data that's available to understand someone's potential gender, along with the cues and the signals that you have on your site. What gender is the product being looked at from this person here versus that person? What are people adding to cart? What are people kind of constantly doing and looking at? So there's all these cues that you can use to leverage segmentation based off what people are doing on their site, what they've purchased and whatnot. And with all of the above, you have to be A/B testing. You want to optimize, you know, the traffic and the leads and the emails and the offers and everything you're doing. So that way you're driving the maximum impact possible. And with all of that, probably the least sexy, most important thing about email is email deliverability, really making sure that you're being mindful of your email delivery. If you do those five or six things that I mentioned, you're going to be light years ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, I love it, man. So there's a few things to unpack there. So you talk about, first of all, pop-ups and having some sort of offer, like free shipping, you know, 10, 20, 30% off, some sort of coupon code. Is that the fastest way to build your list? Are there any other ways that you've found or any tactics that you would highly recommend that are cost effective?
Yeah, I'd say like for where our clients are at right now, you know, driving paid traffic to a website, a landing page, whatever it might be, and then capitalizing with the pop-up typically is the, you know, the highest converting kind of best thing. That being said, there's a host of other things that you guys can do. Everything from running like kind of partnered giveaways. So say you're a brand that sells to men that are 18 to 35, go find three or four other brands that sell to that same demo that don't have competitive products. Their products are complementary, not competitive. And if you guys all kind of partner in promoting to your list, promoting on social, maybe running some ad spend, you can end up with a larger list. That being said, you really want to do a couple things right to make sure that you end up with people that actually want to buy your stuff. Far too often, I'll see like people do a giveaway and they'll give away a car or an iPhone, but yet they sell a t-shirt, right? Just because someone's getting your iPhone or your car doesn't mean they want your t-shirt. So when you do giveaways, give away the thing that you sell. Make sure that people actually want what you're giving away. I think that's one. You know, I think two is, you know, making sure that you've optimized your checkout process so that way when people add their email, they're being added to your database, you kind of can follow up with them there. So I think like paid traffic, giveaways, you know, optimizing the on-site collection is one. There's also stuff out there that's, I'd say in the US is kind of in the white, and then elsewhere you can't really do it. It's kind of a gray or black, so I wouldn't touch it. But there are sites out there that can basically cookie your website, and based off IP address, they can tell you people's emails. It's kind of like this whole interesting strategy where it's kind of almost like retargeting, right? Just like having like a pixel on your site that you can retarget. It's the same thing, but it can actually provide email. So there's a whole host of different strategies depending on where you're based and kind of how you feel about these types of marketing tactics.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So let's talk about kind of, you talked about segmentation. What do you do with people that aren't engaged and how do you keep them engaged? And how often should you mail your list?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in terms of like the frequency really depends. So as I mentioned, you know, our clients do a minimum of $1 million a year, upwards to hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And at those sizes, we're typically sending 2 to 4, or maybe 3 to 5 campaigns per week per client. Some brands more, some brands less. So if you have a smaller list and you have fewer SKUs, you probably want to send maybe weekly or maybe twice a week. So depending on list size, the season, right? During Black Friday, Cyber Monday coming up, obviously everyone's going to be way more aggressive than normal. So your frequency during that period of time might be daily, whereas throughout the rest of the year, it might be once, twice, three times a week. You know, the more SKUs you have, the more SKUs and products you're adding, the more often that you can send. the more often that you're kind of testing offers and having different creative. So most of our clients, 7 to 9 figures, send 2 to 4, 3 to 5 times a week. But if you're a smaller store kind of just starting out, I would start with once a week. Make it really manageable. And then as your list scales, as you have other things going on, look at doing twice a week and then kind of gradually scale up by looking at the data and saying, are my people enjoying these emails? And then also having this thing called a preference page. So what most people do is they have send emails and then they have an unsubscribe. They don't have the ability for people to manage preference. And that helps you basically keep people on your list, but help them kind of set the frequency that they want to receive. So they might only want to receive sales emails. So if you're only sending sales email on a monthly basis, they might only receive a monthly email. However, maybe they don't want to receive sales and they only want to receive education. So allowing people to kind of self-select, that's really important. One other thing that's really interesting that we've done is this concept of what's called a snooze button. It's similar to a preference page, but the very bottom of the email, almost towards the footer, ahead of the unsubscribe, it says, snooze your emails for a period of time, 2 weeks or a month. So people can temporarily opt out of your emails for 2 or 4 weeks, whatever reason it might be. Maybe they're traveling, maybe they're in their busy season. So by allowing people to either manage preferences or pause emails for a small period of time, we've seen that save a lot of unsubs. So that's a big one. And then what was the other part of the question? You asked about frequency and then...
And then I guess, not just frequency, but keeping your list engaged.
Yes. Yeah. So I think like with finding the right frequency and sending the right content mix, so there's frequency and then there's variety, right? And those two go really hand in hand. Frequency is how often do you send? And that's kind of what we talked about. And then variety is, well, when you do send, what are you sending? Are you sending sales emails all the time? If so, you're going to have a lot of people opt out. Unless you're known for being a discount brand and people are signing up for daily deals or ongoing deals, if you're just pushing sales down people's face, people are going to unsub. So you really want to find that balance between education, entertainment, content, and sales, right? I think people have different goals when they sign up to a brand. If you think about the company called Chubbies, right? The ones that makes like those swim trunks and those board shorts, at least in the US, they're really big. A lot of people found those emails really funny and really humorous and really just enjoyed them. And they had a really unique voice. So it also too depends on like what's your tone and what's your voice. So I think there's like all these factors that come into play. Like, are you funny? Do you have a big list? Do you have a lot of different types of things to say? That really helps you get away with sending more emails. And if you kind of get into this part where like you're not really sure why things are happening, people are unsubscribing, there's not a lot of engagement, the easiest, quickest way that a lot of people forget is just ask, right? Ask people on your list, like, what do you want to see? You know, how do you feel about what we've been sending? And even within the email, you could have like something at the bottom that says like, click one of these things, 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 5-star, and let us know how we're doing. So you're going to create this constant feedback loop. So I think a lot of times people are missing those feedback loops and the ability for people to self-select and kind of choose their preferences. With those, you can get away sending more emails and sending the right type of content, plus the segmentation we talked about, right? Like all of these things work together. There's no silver bullet. It's like the more data that you can collect, the more you talk to your users, the better off the experience is going to be. And hopefully you're going to minimize people that end up snoozing and kind of churning off your emails.
Yeah. So I'm also curious when it comes to how many email subscribers you have on average, how much should revenue have you seen? Like, and this is a very difficult question to answer because I know you talk about lead quality and where, you know, the engagement and all that kind of stuff, but what range, like if you have 2,000 people on your email list, what kind of revenue could you expect? Is it $1 per email? Is it $5? Like, what's the range that you've seen?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's really hard to say because when we work with all our clients, the AOV, right, the average order value, the price that people are paying when they order varies. We work with clients like the brand Poopery that makes the spray for the bathroom that might sell like a $5 or $10 spray. And we also work with a company called 8Sleep that sells a $3,000 or $5,000 mattress, right? So it's really hard just because of, one, like frequency, right? The more frequent you send, you're probably driving less revenue per user. Also, too, like the more expensive the product is, you know, the more technically that you'll make per user if it's a good email. So average order value, lifetime value, all these things, like frequency of purchase is really hard. The easier thing to share is kind of what I led with earlier was like about a quarter to, you know, upwards of a half of your revenue should come from email and or SMS, right? Those to kind of combine. So I think, like, you know, if a brand has 2,000 people on their list, you know, maybe they're converting, you know, X percent or half a percent. And also too, like, it depends on if you're looking at campaigns versus flows, right? The revenue from campaigns is going to be a lot lower than the revenue from flows. For example, like your abandoned checkout, that's when people are furthest down the funnel. They've gone through the entire step of almost buying and then they just left. Maybe they got distracted. Maybe you didn't have free shipping. Maybe they're waiting to see if you're going to send an offer. Like the revenue per user there and the conversion rate there is going to be the highest. Like you might convert 5 or 10% of the people that receive the email. And then the revenue per recipient might be dollars or multiple of dollars or, you know, tens of dollars. Whereas in a campaign that's more of like a batch and blast, it's like a product launch. So it is a really hard thing to say just because there's so many different variables. But 2,000 emails, depending on your frequency, depending on the quality, I don't know, you might be able to make hundreds of dollars, potentially to thousands of dollars on a given send, depending on how expensive it is and what you're selling and kind of how engaged they are. Like, what's the open rate? What's the click-through rate? So all of these things kind of factor in.
Yep, got you. Awesome. So let's move to AI. What AI tools are you using right now in your business?
There's kind of four that I primarily use. I think the biggest one, right, the most popular one would be ChatGPT. I use that the most frequently. Another one I'm using is something called TooShort.ai. And basically what it does is, and by the way, I have no ownership. I've got no vested interest in any of these, but basically what it does is you could take your YouTube videos and you can upload them and they'll kind of slice and dice them almost like a video editor. They'll say like, hey, these 30 seconds, these 45 seconds, this minute look interesting. So it's helping me take long form content and turning them into short form. So taking long form YouTube podcasts and turning them into Instagram reels or TikTok videos or YouTube shorts. So that one's called TooShort AI. There's a bunch of those out there. For the agency, for like calls and whatnot, we're either using one called Fireflies or Avoma. And those essentially are taking call notes and transcribing kind of the dialogue of team calls and client calls. And they also have things like sentiment, like who did all the talking? Was the sentiment positive? Was it negative? And it helps you also set reminders. So we're, instead of having our account manager that was responsible for writing and typing all the notes before and had to be super present on kind of writing things down and not present in the conversation, it kind of gives them the time back and the AI is not going to be tired or miss anything, right? So the whole thing gets recorded with AI. And then the last one would be something like a Midjourney to create like images and whatnot that are kind of cool and unique. So those are like the four that I frequently use most often.
Yep. And when it comes to e-commerce businesses, I guess, you know, what do you see as the biggest challenge to implement AI?
Yeah. So I'm going to answer this one about my own business and then I'll kind of answer any questions about kind of e-commerce and I think where email's at and where it's going. I think the biggest challenge for my own agency, which is a marketing agency, I think is a couple of things. I think one is like headcount, two is current process, and three is buy-in. So we have over 100 team members right now with varying level of experience. So some people are using in their spare time and they've got a really good grasp and understanding, while other people have never used it. They've heard of it, but they've never used it. So with that, it's just been really time consuming and expensive to have like the training and resource allocation with everything else we've got going on. So I think at the agency, it's something that we're going to adopt. It's just a matter of time. And I think the other thing that we've kind of been going back and forth on is like the optics with clients around us using AI. So like we're a premium agency, we charge very expensive fees and everything historically has been done by hand. So I think there's kind of some fear from some of the partners and kind of some of our leadership on how clients would feel if we were using AI for some or all of the work. That said, personally for me and all my other businesses, whether it's like my personal brand or some of the businesses that I own that I have one employee, three employees, five employees, we're using AI pretty religiously because it's way easier for me to train them and teach them and kind of to change the process for one or three or five people than it is for us to go change the process for 100 plus people in different parts of the world with different jobs, with different seniority, with different experience. So I think like the big challenge is just around like process and training and kind of just having everyone have like a level playing field, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And when you said about like some of your other businesses that might not have like as big a headcount, how are you using it? What does that look like?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think it's kind of like a double-edged sword in some regard where I think a lot of the reason I'm not hiring more people at these smaller businesses is because we're using AI. With the agency, when AI kind of has come around, we already were so big. And I don't want to say bloated in a bad way, but we had so many people that, like, had we not been that big, AI probably would have been rolled out and we probably would have been able to do more with less and therefore probably not hire nearly as many people. So in terms of like the current people right now on my team, a lot of it is around like content creation. So taking like long form emails or blog content that we've wrote and then repurposing that for short form tweets or for Twitter threads or for LinkedIn carousels. So a lot of like how we're using other businesses is really around like content creation, content editing, proofreading, ideation, formatting. So I'm taking a lot of like content I had and it's been like, these are all the bullet points. These are all the things that I think about email. Here's five types of emails. Turn this into a table or, you know, kind of just some of the formatting and some of the ideas or, hey, will you kind of quickly fact check this? Will you read this? Will you give me some thoughts? Or, hey, I wrote this version. Write me three other subject lines for it. So a lot of like how I'm using on the personal brand and other brands is like, here's my ideas. Here's my thoughts. Give me your feedback, you know, give me kind of some twists on it, give me some things around it. Other things too I've used it for is like big data sets. It's like, here's like the analytics of all my posts. Show me and tell me like where the trends are. When I talk about what topic, what are people resonating with? So for a long time, a lot of my content specifically was e-commerce email marketing. And then through AI, I've learned that when my posts are less specifically to e-commerce email marketing and just general email marketing, they get a lot more engagement and reach because it reaches a broader audience. So a lot of like my pivot on like my personal brand and my other brands in terms of like content and kind of ideation has just been by leveraging data that like I otherwise couldn't understand because it's just too big. There's just too much. I don't have a data analysis background personally. I don't have a data scientist on my team. So that's how we're using it a lot in terms of like being a few people creating content across dozens of channels every single day.
Yeah, interesting. So I have to know, when it comes to AI and email marketing, just even in general, not even just e-commerce, but would love to hear, like, how can people best use AI to automate things? Like give us like some really good hacks, man. What kind of tactics or something that someone can take away where it's just like, boom, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. So in terms of like today, I think like predictive analytics is a really interesting kind of predictive analysis is a really interesting one. So, you know, what is that? Essentially, it's AI, machine learning, and data science, and it's leveraging it to make predictions based on the past to help influence the future. So here's a couple examples. So with predictive analytics, you can analyze past behaviors and try to understand what each individual person on your list is most likely to engage with your emails. So allow you to pick the right content for the right segments, like with a lot more degree of certainty, right? Right now with marketers, a lot of times we're kind of guessing and we're hoping for the best. Like with predictive analytics, it's basically going to say these 5,000 people that have engaged over the last 30 days, they engage the most with the content on current events. And these 5,000 people over here, they only engage with emails that mentioned offers. And these 5,000 people over here, they only wanted to read the blog post. So just like I mentioned before around like asking people for their kind of preferences, a lot of people just frankly aren't going to tell you their preference. They're just not going to click, fill out a form and do these preferences. So when you use predictive analytics, it's basically just analyzing their behavior and making that assumption and that answer for them. And that's how we're going to treat them. And it kind of goes back to like the whole like Henry Ford thing, right? Like if Henry Ford had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses, right? Instead of cars. A lot of times too, like what people actually do within an email and what they actually think they're doing, there's kind of some discrepancy. So by looking at the data, it's super important. Another one could be too, like send time. When are you sending the email? It's super important because with how worldwide and global a lot of people's lists are, you might have people in the US, but there's, you know, four different time zones. You could have people in Europe and Asia and Africa, et cetera, and everyone has different time zones. So me sending at 10 a.m. my time, PST, isn't the one size fits all for everyone else. Maybe we should be sending it at 7 a.m. everyone's local time, or maybe we should be sending it at 10 p.m. everyone's local time. So by analyzing the behavior of each of your subscribers to understand when they're opening and they're engaging with your emails is going to help you understand when to send it for each person in the future. And then a couple other things could be around like content recommendations. So, you know, recommending content and products and services based off their past behaviors and preferences, At scale is actually really, really hard. A lot of these recommendations that people are giving just aren't the right recommendations. They're doing like a one size fits all versus making sure that the content is super tailored to each person. So I'm like really excited about leveraging the data set historically to make your best guess forward, and along with kind of future testing to serve people content and having content be dynamic, and that's super relevant. So like I think that like emails moving towards allowing people to convert and buy within an email through AMP and by leveraging AI to send people the right thing. So like that's some of the stuff that you can leverage right now to have these insights to drive more conversions. When you do this, you'll notice a big difference in your conversions.
How do you do that though? Like what tools, like, yeah, can we get into specifics?
Yeah, so like for example, like Klaviyo is probably the big one that most people know in e-commerce, right? Sendlane is another one that people know, you know, Jimmy Kim, great guy. Like Klaviyo is investing a lot of money into their predictive analytics, right? So if you go into Klaviyo, you could kind of do these things directly and natively within the tool. So one of the things I mentioned before was like understanding people's genders. So if you go into Klaviyo, you can do predictive analytics for gender. And what they're going to basically do is they're going to analyze all your people on your list. They're going to look at their names and they're going to take that data and compare it with census data. And they're going to say the name Chase, maybe we're not sure if that's a guy or a girl, right? It could be either. But the name Paul was always a guy, right? And the name Veronica was always a female. So they're able to take this really big data set of like the likelihood that someone is male versus female or unknown. And then from there, if you're sending an email to men, the top half of your email should be products for men. And then the second half should be products for women. But if you're selling to women, it should be the opposite. Women's content should be first, men should be second. And just by like these small adjustments and edits, we've been seeing lifts in click-through, conversion rate, and at scale. I mean, dude, we're emailing 50,000 people typically on the lowest side for our clients, upwards to like 5 or 10 million. If we're able to lift conversion rates by a couple points, you know, in each email, if we can lift it by 10% or 20% over what it was, it's pretty significant in terms of revenue we're driving. So tools like Klaviyo, and I think Sendlane has it, or they're rolling out, a lot of these tools are kind of natively building it. And that's kind of like in terms of like the future of e-commerce, like in terms of people like getting access to this, I think the technology needs to continue to improve. There's some of it today, like we're actively doing the things that I just told you about today. But if the tech comes a little bit further and it becomes a little bit more universal, where every single ESP, every email platform, right, has this, then it's going to be so easy for this to happen. And I think the future is like AI is automatically analyzing data. It's automatically recommending things. And I actually even think too that like a lot of these ESPs are going to take tools out there like Copy AI or Jasper AI and build them in or integrate them in. And it's actually going to write the copy and it's going to create the designs for you. And it's going to give you these different types of things. And then for you as the marketer, you might be able to say, hey, I want this or I want that. So I think like that's the future, is like this tools set getting a little bit more robust, this automatically creating things, and almost like you have like an email template where you can kind of create and drag and drop modules. I think templates are going to be created for us and copies can be created for us. And it's up to us as the final sayers of this to be like, cool, this looks great as is, or make these changes or combine these two versions, right? So I think that's like where it's at, where it's going. So I think it's going to like empower people to take responsibilities that they otherwise needed to offload. Because right now, like the process of getting this whole thing that we're talking about done is really time extensive and really expensive. Right now, as a marketer, you have to comb through data. You have to share the learnings with the copywriters and the designers. You have to then come up with the angle you're going to take. The copywriter then writes the copy. The designer then does the design. And then it goes through all these iterations and this feedback. And the current process right now is so inefficient. It's not quick. And I think AI is going to allow these things to just be super quick and in real time. And one person can have the power of five people. So that this stuff is, a lot of it's possible today. And part of this end part, I think, is what's possible in the future.
So, man, look, I could talk to you all day about this stuff, but we have to work towards wrapping up. I've got one last question, and that is, if you could boil it down to one tool that could give e-com founders a competitive advantage using AI, what would it be? How would you go about it? Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'd say like the two, right? Because there are two different things. I'd say like ChatGPT is insane for editing and ideation and copy and first draft. I think that paired with your ESP, so whether it's Klaviyo or Sendlane, like those compared together is really powerful, right? Having some of the stuff that can't be done in the ESP is done through ChatGPT, and then some of the things that can't be done in the other. So I think like ChatGPT plus your ESP, Klaviyo or SendLane, it's super powerful for the data, for the copy, for all these things. I think you could be pretty unstoppable with those two.
Yeah. And then when it comes to ChatGPT, how do you best train it? And I know like you got to run soon, but like, yeah, how do you best train it, man? Because it's not enough just to like type in, write this email, you know, because people can tell and it's the copy's not like good.
Yeah, I think one like comes with like understanding like how to create prompts. And then two is just giving feedback. And then they recently rolled out the ability to kind of set like universal rules. So like, for example, before what I would do is I would just keep the same tab open for my Twitter posts and I'd have a different tab for LinkedIn. And I would be just every day feeding it. These are the tweets that I did this week that did well. And this is what each one got. So I would just feed it the data. I would feed it examples, right? And the other cool thing too is somehow ChatGPT has known who I am. So I'll even ask them saying, write tweets like you're Chase Diamond. And it's pretty crazy to see the feedback. And they'll be like, and they'll use emojis. I'm like, no, 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 I don't use emojis, no emojis. And they'll use hashtag, like no hashtags. So I've kind of just like started with, you know, basic to decent prompts and then just given a lot of feedback over time. And then I've sent my kind of global rules for it. So that way it learns and it knows. And then all I have to do now at this point is like, you know, next one. And it can create me a table pulling from my blog, or it could create me a table pulling from something I upload. So it's pretty crazy. Like once you train it enough, like it gets pretty good.
Mm. So you would say that majority of the content that you're putting out is created by AI?
Created, edited, updated. Like, so I wouldn't say like AI is the end all be all of my content, but all of my content touches AI in some form. So a lot of like what I found that works on social media, this is away from like e-commerce email marketing, like a lot of what I've found on LinkedIn in particular, dude, over the last 12 months, I've had 110 million impressions of my content on LinkedIn, all organic. And what I've basically done is I've gone to sources like my Twitter, and I've taken my top posts on Twitter, and I say, hey, edit these to be more on brand for LinkedIn, right? So like, I'll basically take my short form content and make it longer form for LinkedIn. And then I'll take my content that performs, that's really unique on LinkedIn, and I'll shorten it for Twitter. So my content kind of goes through different phases. I'm taking popular stuff I've written in the past and I'm using AI to refresh or update or edit it. And then it's just so easy for me to create tons of content. Like right now, across my own channels, like I have one or two profiles on every social network there is. And on LinkedIn right now, I run a network of about a dozen pages that have about 500,000 followers. And we're creating content every single day from there within minutes from AI. So I'd say AI is a big part of it. It's not the only part.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, dude, thank you so much for just sharing all of your experiences, wisdom, lessons learned across e-commerce, email marketing, and AI. Thank you so much. This is incredibly helpful for people.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me. This was awesome.
Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.